Some of you probably received the message that we're going to have our formation teaching this afternoon, and the topic is Pope Francis's catechetical instruction on the eighth commandment, you shall not bear false witness. So I was looking at that talk last night, and the Pope, as usual, has some very good insights into the deeper meaning of these commandments, and he usually emphasizes the value that is being promoted. So he doesn't talk so much about not lying or about not bearing a false witness, but he talks a lot about the truth and how we are obliged to speak the truth and to live the truth. Bearing witness is more than simply what we say. We communicate by our whole way of life. So that was in my mind when I picked up this gospel today. I have in mind, truth is communicated by a whole way of life. And it has a very powerful impact, the proclamation of truth and the witness of truth, of the testimony of life to the truth. Well, in fact, if you want to use an example, look at today's saint. St. Agnes is only 12 years old. Who's going to listen to her, the 12-year-old girl? Who's going to pay any attention to her? She's a nobody. Well, she testifies to the truth. She testifies to the truth that Jesus is the Lord, and she testifies to the truth that she loves this Lord so much that she will rather die than be separated from him. And that becomes a very powerful testimony, even if we don't know any of her words. There's some tradition of things that she said, but the real testimony is her martyrdom itself. She's one of the famous virgin martyrs of the early church, a witness to the truth. Okay, so this is all in my mind, and I pick up this gospel, and there's a passage here which describes large crowds of people flocking to Jesus. Not just people from Capernaum or people from Galilee, but from all over the place, from some distance across the Jordan, up Tyre and Sidon. This is quite a phenomenon in an age when travel was difficult and communications were difficult, that so many people from so many places were coming to him. It might make us think a little bit about what attracts crowds. A lot of things do. You can get some famous movie star and he'll attract a crowd, or a singer, or a sports figure, charismatic character of some kind, they attract crowds. Miracle workers attract crowds. Do preachers attract crowds? Sometimes they do. And it's a puzzle to people. They can't sing very well, they're not doing miracles, there's nothing that appealing about their personality. And yet, something about the message is so powerful that it attracts crowds. Now, in the case of Jesus, a lot of things attract the people. What's mentioned specifically is his power to cure, to heal. Well, that would attract crowds in any age. And sick people are always looking for ways to be healed, and can't blame them. But for a sick person to make a long journey, that's quite a commitment. You have to be pretty sure that there was something authentic going on here before you would make such a journey, if you could even do it at all. In our times, people make a lot of the importance of social media, the communication media. And it's a very big influence on modern life, huge, that messages can be transmitted so quickly and to so many people. It doesn't mean that they're true, but it just means that there's the capability of spreading the news. It doesn't, whether it's authentic news or fake news. And it's important that we use these tools for proclaiming the truth. In fact, we're doing it now. I'm recording this, and somebody somewhere in the world might listen to this recording and will say, well, thanks be to God for the technology that makes it possible for the truth and the gospel to be proclaimed and spread. But we shouldn't exaggerate the importance of the social media either, because it doesn't have staying power. It's just a momentary noise. You've had this, you get an email, you get a text message. Oh, it says, whatever, the Pope died. You say, oh, then you say, oh, wait a minute, that's not true. And then you forget about it. Or if you get a message that's true, then you say, oh my. So it's not just the means of the communication, it's the message itself that has the power. And truth is, my point here, is that truth has great power. And this was true long before social media was ever invented. Look at this. We're way back in the first century AD, and the word spreads to far distant places that there's a guy here who has healing power and who's a messenger of God. Now, it's not, we don't know exactly what people told each other about Jesus, but whatever they told each other had impact on them. The message spread, and it spread pretty fast. This is still early in his public ministry. So within a few months, he's attracting huge crowds. No texting involved, no Facebook. In fact, even if they had, they can't read. We're talking about illiterate people. They don't get messages from the newspaper. They get messages from people they trust. And if it's true, then they will spread it. Because truth is a precious gift, and we welcome it and we spread it if we're good people. Anyway, so there's something about Jesus, about his words, about his actions, about his power, about his witness, about his whole way of life that is very powerful, very appealing, also very disturbing, as we know. Crowds were attracted to him, and crowds also opposed him. The people in power especially were jealous of him. They felt threatened by him. They felt judged by him. And there was lots of reactions. But the point here is there's something about the truth that has staying power. It has impact. It has power to change us. It gives us something to really stand on. In fact, something to die for. Go back to St. Agnes. There's something about truth that is worth more than life in this world. This will help us understand the power of the priesthood. Today's first reading is again a passage from the letter to the Hebrews on the priesthood of Christ. And again, there's a distinction between the priesthood of the old law and the priesthood of Christ, the new priesthood. The old priesthood, as good as it was limited. And priests, they had to keep sacrificing day after day for their own sins and for the sins of the people. And when they died, well, then some other priest had to come along and keep it up. It didn't have staying power. It didn't have transforming power. I don't even know if there is an Old Testament priesthood existing in the world now. I guess you'd have to get to know the Jews. The Jews have rabbis, they have synagogues, but they don't have a temple. I don't know if there's anybody from the tribe of Levi offering sacrifices according to the law. Maybe there are, I just don't know. But even if there are, they don't attract much attention, and they don't have much power. They're not attracting crowds. The priesthood of Jesus Christ, though, is something completely different. He has obtained a much more excellent ministry, as he is mediator of a better covenant and acted on better promises. And it's a priesthood that extends beyond this world. Jesus is always able to save those who approach God through him, since he lives forever to make intercession for them. It's the same strength and impact that we see influencing the crowds in the gospel. There was something about Jesus that made people aware they're in touch with something beyond the mundane concerns of the day. And it's all the more true now that Jesus died and rose and ascended to the Father and reigns high priest forever in heaven. But this also tells us why the priesthood in the church still has impact, and why it's still the center of interest and even controversy. Not because any particular priest is so handsome or so eloquent or so powerful, but because people know that what is done through the hands of the priest goes beyond this world. It's not simply the offering of gifts and sacrifices that were prescribed by the old law. We are put in the presence of something transcendent. If it weren't so, it wouldn't have staying power. Who cares about priests? You know, a couple of years ago, another one of these big scandals hit the media, and some people, even some Catholics, started saying, why do we have bishops? Why do we have priests? All they do is scandalize us. All they do is contradict what they say. Their lifestyle is a degradation. Let's get rid of that old practice. And anyone with faith would say, well, you can't throw out the baby with the bathwater. We're not following priests because we think they're such great guys. We're following Jesus Christ, and he's working through these guys. It's easy to attract a crowd, they say. You can get a stripper and attract a crowd. You can get a baseball team and attract a crowd. You get a fireworks display, you can attract a crowd. And there's lots of ways to attract a crowd, but they don't have lasting impact. And after a while, people say, well, I've seen enough. I saw that movie already. I'm not going to keep going to it. I heard that singer already. I've got other things to do. But if something has the power of the truth behind it, which is divine power, then it lasts. It can even survive scandals. So, just a little reflection here on what it was that was attracting these crowds in the gospel, identified in the first reading as the eternal priesthood of Christ, our connection on earth to something that transcends this world, something that's worth laying down one's life for, like young Saint Agnes. This is what we have been given. This is what we are pondering. This is who we're following: Jesus Christ, the eternal high priest.